Moses sees the Garden of Eden. God instructs Adam and Eve. Moses 3:15-17. Book of Moses, Essay Number 57, by the Book of Mormon Central Team with Jeffrey M. Bradshaw. In this essay, we review the instructions given to Adam and Eve, the commandments to be fruitful and multiply and not to eat of the tree of knowledge, the instruction for Adam to cleave to Eve, the most unique of God's creations, and the commandment for them to dress and keep the garden. As with other parts of this rich story, there is far more than meets the eye when the details are fully appreciated. The first two commandments to Adam and Eve. The illustration above shows God creating Eve and then instructing the couple. It was created under the direction of Herod of Hohenburg, a 12th century abbess who was responsible for assembling a comprehensive and copiously illustrated compendium of knowledge and salvation history called Hortus Deliciarum, Garden of Delights. The details of the depiction draw on traditions from outside of Genesis. The commandment to be fruitful and multiply, Moses 2:27. As was discussed in Essay Number 50, an essential part of the plan was for Adam and Eve to have children. In the middle of the drawing above, a tree of life has sprouted human faces resembling Adam and Eve, attesting to ancient traditions about individual premortal existence. This tree of souls, as it was called, which in Jewish legend represented the heavenly tree of life, was thought to produce new souls which ripen and then fall from the tree into the guf, the treasury of souls in paradise. There the soul is stored until the angel Gabriel reaches into the treasury and takes out the first soul that comes into his hand so that it can be born into mortality. The commandment not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, Moses 3:16-17. Gary A. Anderson points out an interesting divergence between the Genesis story and the drawing featured here. Quote, whereas Genesis 2 recounts that Adam was created first, given a commandment, and only then received a spouse, the Hortus Deliciarum has it that Adam was created, then Eve was drawn from his rib, and finally both were given a commandment. At right, God gestures toward the tree of knowledge in warning as he takes Adam by the wrist. At the same time, Eve raises her arm in what seems a gesture of consent to God's commandment. Eve's fivefold uniqueness. Donald W. Perry sees a fivefold uniqueness in the creation of Eve that is related to Moses 3, related in Moses 3. 1. Creation is forming versus building. While the Hebrew verb used to describe Adam's creation means to form or fashion, the verb used for Eve is to build, recalling the building of temples and altars. The term is also used with regard to women bearing and delivering children. 2. Formed from the ground versus built from a living creature. Whereas Adam and the animals were formed from Adama, the ground, Eve was built from a Selah, traditionally translated as a rib, but more accurately translated as a side, containing both flesh and bone. Hence Adam's exclamation of joy, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." Richard Draper et al. Observed that the expression does not mean that Eve's physical body was derived from Adam, but rather that the bodies of Adam and Eve derived from a common source. This interpretation is supported by the account of Jacob's initial meeting with Laban. When Laban learned that Jacob was his sister's son, he said, "Surely thou art my bone and my flesh." Eve was created while Adam slept. Hebrew tardama is used of abnormally heavy sleep, divinely induced. The image is one of transition from a former state into a new one, a sleep and a forgetting. When the sleeping Adam lost the memory of his past, he also became ignorant of other things. The Apocalypse of Adam records Adam saying that, quote, "The first knowledge that breathed within us left them, and the eternal knowledge of the God of truth withdrew from me and your mother Eve," end of quote. The awakening of Adam represents the beginning of his recovery from his state of ignorance. In the Apocalypse of Adam, he is instructed by three men of surpassing glory. Although in Adam's new state of ignorance, he is at first unable to recognize them, they proceeded to reveal knowledge to him about his Creator. 4. It was not good that the man should be alone, Moses 3:18. Prior to this point, every step of creation had been pronounced good, but Eve's absence from creation was not good. 5. Etzer, quote, Of all God's creative works, she is singularly called Etzer, end of quote. The Hebrew means a helper or strength corresponding to him, or in other words, a completing counterpart. Quote, this term cannot be taken as demeaning because Hebrew Etzer, employed here to describe the intended role of the woman, is often used of God in his relation to man. President Howard W. Hunter said, the Lord intended that the wife be a companion, equal and necessary in full partnership. Thus, in Moses 2, both man and woman are created in the image of God, and in Moses 3, they are described as corresponding strengths. Targum Yerushalmi captures the sense when it refers to the woman as the man's yoke fellow. The marriage of Adam and Eve. In Moses 3:22, God specifically says, I brought Eve unto the man. As noted in a midrash, the image may well be that of God playing the role of the attendant who leads the bride to the groom. Without doubt, the verse conveys the idea that the institution of marriage is established by God himself. God declared that a husband shall cleave unto his wife. The underlying meaning of the idea of two distinct entities becoming attached to one another while preserving their separate identities becomes clear if it is noted that the verb cleave is often used to describe human yearning for and devotion to God. Sexual relations between husband and wife do not rise above the level of animality unless they be informed by and imbued with spiritual, emotional, and mental affinity. When Moses 3:25 states that Adam and Eve were both naked, it means that they were no longer clothed with the memory and glory of their earlier state. The verse attests to the couple's innocence, their lack of awareness, and of the initial change that had come over them at this point in the story, and of the greater change that was yet to come after the fall, a greater change that they would try to correct at that later time with the putting on of the fig leaf apron. Note that the verse is meant to prepare us for Moses 4:13. It forms the transition to the next episode by means of a wordplay on naked, Hebrew arom, and shrewd, Hebrew arum. It also conveys an anticipatory hint at how the two concepts are going to be related. Approximating the Hebrew wordplay in English, we might say, with Gordon Wenham, that the couple aspired to be shrewd, like the serpent. They ended up nude. The fact that Adam and Eve were not ashamed expresses the idea that while the two partners were as yet free from transgression, they could stand naked in God's presence without shame, being clothed with purity in what early commentators called garments of light. The work of Adam and Eve. Given the picture of the naturally growing, life-sustaining yields of the Garden of Eden, coupled with the absence of any troublesome weeds, students of the Bible have made various attempts to understand how Adam and Eve managed to stave off the curse of idleness during their sojourn in that happy place. For example, supposing that the daily labors of the first parents must have closely mirrored our own, Matthew Henry imagined that the man and woman were placed in Eden to improve on God's arrangements for the beauty and productivity of the fruit trees placed there. He reasoned that, quote, nature, even in its primitive state, left room for the improvements of art and industry, end of quote. Supposing that, quote, the husbandman's calling was needed even in paradise, he drew out the lesson from God's instructions to Adam and Eve to dress and keep the garden that, quote, secular employments will very well consist with a state of innocency and a life of communion with God, end of quote. However, in contrast to attempts to draw parallels between secular employments and the work of the first couple in paradise, it is important to realize that the very point of the scriptural injunction in Moses 3:15 is to inform Adam and Eve that no labor of the ordinary kind was required so long as they qualified to remain in that place. In this view, any conception that they were to focus their energies on digging and pruning the trees of Eden is surely mistaken, since the account makes clear that, quote, man's food was ever ready at hand, end of quote. Instead, a different and even more strenuous and demanding kind of work was required of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Consistent with the temple symbolism of Eden in essay number 55, we can conclude that Adam and Eve's preoccupation in paradise was temple work. Moses 3:15 states that Adam and Eve were put in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. The Hebrew terms in Genesis for to dress and to keep respectively connote to work, serve, till, and to keep watch and preserve. Of course, these meanings are not on the face of it inconsistent with the practice of husbandry. However, when we recall the temple-like layout of the Garden of Eden, and the fact that these are the very words that are used to describe the tabernacle duties of the Levites, the phrase takes on deeper significance. Wenham remarked that, quote, "If Eden is seen, then, as an ideal sanctuary, then perhaps Adam should be described as the archetypal Levite," end of quote. John Salehammer similarly comments, quote, "Man's life in the garden was to be characterized by worship and obedience. He was a priest, not merely a worker and keeper of the garden." Throughout Moses 3, the author has consistently and consciously developed the idea of man's likeness to God along the same lines as the major themes of the Pentateuch as a whole, namely the theme of worship and Sabbath rest. In considering what occupied Adam's and Eve's time during their stay in paradise, remember that God had not yet declared an end to the period of sanctification. He had purposed for the seventh day of creation. The first couple was no doubt meant to, quote, "imitate the divine pattern of sacred rest, paralleling in a general way mankind's later weekly Sabbath keeping," end of quote. Conclusions. The idyllic setting of Eden, the commandments of a loving father, and the companionship of strength afforded by a marriage partner set up what would seem to be the ideal conditions for happiness. However, so long as Adam and Eve remained in the garden, their opportunities for progression were limited. In the next essay, we will discuss the symbolism of the tree of life and the tree of knowledge. Later, in essay number 60, we will examine the temple layout of the Garden of Eden in more detail. In this way, we will better appreciate the opportunities provided by God and exploited by Satan.